versus us in the Bible lands. Last time I was there, about a year and a half ago, I spent 2 weeks living in a room that was with a very similar view to what you see right here. It's not quite. I was a little bit off to the left there, but overlooking the Temple Mount, Mount of Olives in the distance there. And every night for 2 weeks, got to see a sunset like this one, got to see these lights, to live in the land and then read these verses and place myself, as you will, in the footsteps of Jesus and the apostles is really a very, very moving thing. There's much of the scripture that's geographical, and so you just simply get a clearer picture as God portrays it. But there really is something about being there. You know, it's just not the same until you arrive on the location and can actually walk the same trails that Jesus and the apostles did. We have been walking together now here in this congregation for 7 years. Last week, at the end of the assembly, I announced that I would be leaving. My last sermon will be Sunday mornings on the 22nd of September, and then Wednesday night, the 25th, again, I'll teach the last class. Don and I have had an amazing week since that announcement. Not only have there been some really earnest and extremely heartwarming expressions of appreciation, quite a few tears that have been shed, and so a very momentous for us in an emotional manner. And I just want to thank all of you for that response and for our time together. It has really been good. These 7 years went by really fast, and I think we've accomplished a lot. I'm grateful for each and every one of your participation. And then even for a handful of you, we got to share that time in Israel as well. And so we have special bonds that Don and I have to this congregation that do not exist with either of the previous two. And so you now have the record. It's the second longest time I've spent with a given congregation at 7 years. We did 27 years with the first one, so I doubt I'm going to be able to break that record. But we are hoping to have even another 20 years, perhaps, of preaching. And so I preach. That's what I do. I feel a lot like Paul. I read about it. I think that if I did not preach, then woe be unto me. You know, I have a charge that's been committed to me. When I look back on the early years of my life, it is just so very apparent that I was being prepared to do this. The circumstances just all pointed in that direction. And I never knew a desire to do anything else. From the time that I was baptized into Christ just a few weeks before I was 21 to this day, that being from 1973 until now, I've never had an interest that began to rival my interest in just what the Scriptures say. And then recognizing that you couldn't shut me up if you wanted to, then maybe I ought to go preach. I wasn't afraid of an audience, that's for sure. And so eventually it brought us here. After 33 years of preaching, we came here, and I've now completed 40 with your help. Thank you for that. I'm proud of the Lord's people in general, but proud of you in particular. But what a week. We had a deal on our house, and then the deal fell through, and then 48 hours later it was back again. We've been in and out and in and out and in and out and trying to schedule, because this buyer, assuming she doesn't back out again, wanted us to leave in 25 days, wants us out of the house by the 27th of August. So, obviously, as I've just said, we've got to stay here for yet another month, and we're really looking forward to it. Airbnb is a wonderful thing. I can't wait to show you all the hand-built cedar dome, geodesic dome, that we're going to be living in for a month. Come visit us. Thanks to Airbnb, we also got to be, I think it's like the third occupant. So if you know when you go up Willamette Street and you go high enough, you'll come to a lower parking lot and then the main parking lot for Spencer Butte. All of you that have been up there have been hiking up on Spencer Butte. A little less, I think, even than a quarter of a mile past that on the right-hand side, there's this geodesic dome. Come see us after the 27th. That's where we'll be. But what I've also been going through, you know, seeing this coming now for, you know, well over a year and almost two, we've been planning and thinking, you know, and I've been planning and thinking, what are you going to preach there, you know, at the end? It's obvious, Sunday morning class, I hope to race on through and finish 1 Corinthians, so we'll not be doing 2 Corinthians, but I hope at least to finish the first letter. Now, we'll continue with Deuteronomy, and then I'll have a class, maybe one, left over to consider on Wednesday nights. I'll be working through Titus and 2 Timothy one chapter at a time, one chapter per night on Sunday evening, so I hope you'll join us for that. But I very purposely left the Sunday morning sermon schedule open. If you have some suggestions for that, I'd appreciate it. But I've been thinking about this and thinking about this for the longest time, and particularly in the light of a number of passages that are like this one in 1 Corinthians chapter 2. About 970 B.C., 1 Corinthians 2 begins like this. As David's time to die drew near, he charged Solomon his son, saying, I am going the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and show yourself a man. Keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his ordinances, and his testimonies, according to what is written in the law of Moses, that you may succeed in all that you do and wherever you turn, so that the Lord may carry out his promise which he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons are careful of their way to walk before me in truth, which is the word I've capitalized and underlined, if your sons are careful of their way to walk before me in truth with all their heart and with all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. God made a dynastic promise to David. David, you've been a man after my own heart. And David, when his time drew near, wanted his son Solomon to be exactly the same. And David understood, like few people could, seeing that the sword never departed from his house because of one great and terrible sin that he committed, that you reap what you sow, and that the things that you do can have either a negative or a positive impact on generations to come. David understood that your every deed has consequences, your every word will reverberate through hearts and minds. Everything that you are and that you do, we understand as Christians, is intended to be a light to the world, to be observed and to be watched. And so here's this great moment where David's particular time of life is coming to an end, and he has this charge for Solomon. I found myself thinking that while certainly, you know, I'm not inspired and none of you are my children, that yet I feel the same way. What can I leave you with that will continue to have our hearts bound together as they have been? But what is the most important? I've got so little time left. What is it that really, really, really matters? And so I'm thinking about this passage, thinking about a lot of passages, but it was this very word, the truth, that has been, for me at least, it has been absolutely the most valuable and precious thing. It has been that which I have pursued with my entire life. I've worked as many as two secular jobs so that I could preach, you know, at a given time. I moved, you know, to other states so that I could study the scriptures with a teacher that I'd heard of twice. Dragged Donna, you know, through one of those moves to come up there to Washington in the beginning. And so the truth has always been, brethren, the only thing that really mattered to me. A good friend of mine in the past used to say that he didn't care what the truth was, as long as he knew what it was. And I think that is such a profound statement. Never to be prejudiced, never to be demanding of God, never trying to rewrite it, to be absolutely without a bias or prejudice or any particular goal or intent when it comes to God's message, but just to find it, just to have it. So I thought with at least the first of these seven lessons that I'd present for you just a number of scriptures, a little longer than we usually do, less, you know, digging into them perhaps as I usually do. But just thinking about the enormity of the value of the truth and nothing else whatsoever. In this passage, if your sons are careful to walk before me in truth with all their heart and soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. In Joshua, 1400 B.C., so quite a few centuries, 500 years before that, it says in 24:11, Joshua now says at the end of his life, you crossed the Jordan and came to Jericho, and the citizens of Jericho fought against you. This is God's words, but he is recording them. Fought against you, and the Amorite, and the Perizzite, and the Canaanite, and the Hittite, and the Girgashite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Brethren, they fought against them. Do you see that? Now, this battle that was so physical for them, brethren, has never, ever ceased. Our New Testament scriptures are full of references to military things, to warfare. Warfare that's taking place in heaven as well as on the earth. You crossed the Jordan and came to Jericho, and the citizens of Jericho fought against you. The Amorite, and the Perizzite, and the Canaanite, and the Hittite, and the Girgashite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Thus I gave them into your hand. Then I sent the hornet before you, and it drove out the two kings of the Amorites from before you. But not by your sword, or by your bow, I gave you a land on which you had not labored, and cities which you had not built, and you have lived in them. You are eating of vineyards and olive groves which you did not plant. So God makes a pretty big point through Joshua here now of the fact that these people are, as we often say, standing on others' shoulders. In their case, they're inheriting the possessions of evil people. But we, in a far better and more desirable sense, have inherited the work of those that have gone before. We're all of us, you know, the beneficiaries of work that's been done in the past. And so, with the passing recently of Millie, I learned, we lost one of the very first that was responsible for the beginning of this congregation. But I trust this congregation will go on, even as David's dynasty did. I trust that this congregation will go on, even though Joshua had to watch them go off into battle, you know, and continue in all of those battles. With his passing, nothing's coming to an end. The Jews would occupy that land for, you know, millenniums to come. But brethren, it's all about the truth, because the rest of that passage I may not have. What happened? I thought I had the rest of Joshua, so I better go back and get it. Everybody, I'm going to have to look. I thought I had a passage there in the next slide, but somehow I lost it. So I want to finish in Joshua 24 at verse 14, which is right like this. 24:14. Now listen closely. Now therefore, based on your inheriting all these things, now therefore, fear the Lord and serve Him in sincerity and truth. Put away the gods which your father served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve Yahweh. And if it's disagreeable in your sight to serve Yahweh, choose for yourselves today whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served, which were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you're living. But as for me and my house, we will serve Yahweh. Now, brethren, what I did was I went through about 480 verses in the Old Testament and the New that used this word truth. I didn't even do a word search on true, where you would have expressions like true words. Just on truth. And then I've selected a very small number of those. But in the process of looking at every occasion in both Testaments, and it takes a while, I began to see, you know, things being joined together that I just had not noticed before. In this particular passage, just for instance, I just think it is profoundly important what Joshua says here when he is saying, I understand by inspiration, as he prepares a people to go on without him and to triumph over unbelievable opposition, but also to recognize from whence they have come and the blessings that God has bestowed upon them. What he says is, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth. Serve your God in sincerity and truth. Reminds me of John chapter 4. Those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. Well, you must have a sincere spirit. But it's not just how you feel about it or your integrity, how sincere that you are. All the sincerity in the world without the truth makes you a Paul the Apostle in his persecuting days. All the sincerity without the truth can make you a high enemy of the Lord God of heaven, as it has for the vast majority of the religious world. I don't doubt that denominational churches are sincere, brethren. I never have. I've met some I could tell were hypocrites. I think most of those people are just the blind being led by the blind. But they're sure enough sincere, and they will go to their graves and be eternally lost because of sincerity that is without truth. These two are of equal importance. Truth without sincerity makes you a Pharisee. Truth without sincerity makes you a hypocrite. So here's Joshua, 1400 BC, 3400 years ago. And as he passes off a scene that he's led for quite a while, he's thinking, as I am, about sincerity and truth, about keeping these two linked together, about making sure that you succeed in all God's will for you, because you are absolutely sincere. But you also believe the truth and not something else. 400 years later, thereabouts, in 1050 B.C., perhaps, 1 Samuel says in verses 22 to 25, I really ought to tear today, I lost a verse or chapter there. But it says nonetheless, the Lord will not abandon his people on account of his great name, because the Lord has been pleased to make you a people for himself. Now, if you stop right there, brethren, you know, we are greater than John the Baptist, we are told. This because we are a part of that eternal kingdom that was prophesied by Daniel, that was prepared by John, but which we're a part of, what we live in. And the Lord will not abandon his people today as Christians any more than he did the Jews of old. Not abandon his people on account of his great name. That's what matters. That's what we glorify. Christ, Christianity, is based on somebody else, not us. And he says, because the Lord has been pleased to make you a people for himself. Moreover, as for me, far be it from me, Samuel says. I think it's chapter 12, but I'm not sure, 1 Samuel. Far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord by ceasing to pray for you. But I will instruct you in the good and right way. Only fear the Lord, sounds like Joshua now, and serve him in truth with all your heart. For consider what great things he has done for you. But if you still do wickedly, both you and your king will be swept away. Oh, the power that we have to this day. The amazing power that we have to be each of us individually righteous, useful, actively engaged in the kingdom, or not. And either way, to have such power over the fortunes of a given congregation, or in their case, in the fortunes of their nation. Fear the Lord and serve him in truth with all your heart. And I hope you caught the way I interpret and read these verses then, when he adds to that, for consider what great things he's done for you. If you will immerse yourself in the truth, if you will immerse yourself in the Word, if you will truly be students therein, eager and often, Then, brethren, you serve him in truth with all your heart because you know what he's done for you. And that heartfelt service is easy. It's not burdensome. It's not hard. For consider what great things he's done for you. Think about it. Now, I love my parents. Truly did. Loved them whether they had money or not. But it was a long time ago in 1976 when my dad gave me $5,000 so I could buy a $20,000 house. It was 85 years old. I mean, it was a wreck, but I went to work on it. Love my dad for that. And you know, 4 years later, I sold that $20,000 house for $54,000. Got me a leg up. I bought a piece of property for $18,000, and I built a house. I spent $400 on that. And I sold it for considerably more after we'd lived in it for 24 years. And I took that money and I bought another house. I'm ashamed to tell you how much I paid for it. It is a lot. Sweeping view of the valley and the mountains and the river and everything. You know, we were living high on the hog then. And then I lost all of it, all the equity anyway, selling out to go preach for another congregation at the worst of the recession. These fortunes, brother, they come and go. So we got pretty well wiped out, lost our fortune, you know, all invested in the house. But I've never forgotten what my dad did. We bought another house. And I went to work on the house I'm in right now. And I'm going to make a ton of money on that house. I really am. You know why? Because my dad gave me $5,000 in 1976. And I've been playing with it, sometimes successfully and sometimes not, ever since. Consider what great things God has done for you. What else would there be but this heartfelt service? Fear the Lord and serve him in truth if you just could see what he's done. Psalm 40, about 975 B.C. or thereabouts, David said these words in verses 6 through 11. Sacrifice and meal offering you have not desired. My ears you have opened. Burnt offering and sin offering you have not required. Then I said, behold, I come. In the scroll of the book, it is written of me. I delight to do your will, O my God. Your law is within my heart. I have proclaimed glad tidings of righteousness in the great congregation. Behold, I will not restrain my lips, O Lord. You know. I have not hidden your righteousness within my heart. I have spoken of your faithfulness and your salvation. I have not concealed your loving kindness and your truth from the great congregation. You, O Lord, will not withhold your compassion from me. Your loving kindness and your truth. I forgot to highlight the second one here like I did there. Your loving kindness and your truth will continually preserve me. My wife and I expect that this is as true for us today as ere it was for David so long ago. Your truth will continually preserve me. Your loving kindness and your truth will continually preserve me. And then I thought, I've seen all these truth verses. So I went and I looked up loving kindness plus truth in the same verse. And you know that phrase occurs 20 times in your Old Testament. God thinking in terms of his loving kindness and his truth being coupled together. The things that he has given us, including his word, when we remember in gratitude and we learn of his doctrine, and brethren, he continually preserves us. That goes for this congregation. That goes for you individually. It goes for his work in every nation and every land. We started ahead, Evan Reed, Proverbs 3, verses 1 through 4, about 940 B.C., I suppose. Sacrifice and meal offering, Solomon said, you have not desired. What have I done? What am I doing here, brethren? I just can't believe I messed that up. So that one, too, I got to fix. Apparently, I just took the preceding slide and forgot to actually get the verses here. Aren't you glad you're getting rid of me? Look at Proverbs 3 in your Bibles, in verses 1 through 4. My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. Do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. So you will find favor and good repute in the sight of God and man. Kindness and truth. Always these two linked together. And then God and man will respond. Now surely not those who care little for the truth. They're not going to respond. You can woo and win a lot of people with kindness as long as you just don't, you know, talk about the truth. There are some people who've accepted the truth. One of them kept me from learning the truth on a particular topic for 3 years because he was just one of the most vicious, mean guys I ever met. I once apologized to a Pentecostal preacher for him. Okay? It takes both, brethren. It takes both. And then there are no bounds because God has promised. Now, I'll leave you with the last two, both in the book of Jeremiah, and both not so encouraging, both not with attendant promises, both not with such hopefulness. But in Jeremiah's day was not a happy time. Jeremiah's day and Jeremiah's purpose was to preach about an imminent destruction that could not be avoided, about a people whose hearts were so hard that the truth meant absolutely nothing. And it doesn't matter, brethren, whether you live in those days when everybody's responding to the gospel, or you live in those days when their hearts are as hard as granite. It doesn't matter. God has picked you to love that truth, appreciate His blessings, and keep your mouth open about it, the way David said in the Psalm. But in Jeremiah 5, these are dark days, 600 B.C., and so Jeremiah says, writes, "Roam to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem, and look now and take note," he's commanded by God, "and seek in Jerusalem her open squares. If you could find a man, if there's one who does justice, who seeks truth, then I will pardon her." Can you imagine? Even Abraham could find 10 in Sodom and Gomorrah. Jeremiah can't find one in Jerusalem after David has been king, after Solomon, after Hezekiah. He can't find one. I'd pardon her if I could. And although they say, "As the Lord lives," surely they swear falsely. O Lord, do not your eyes look for truth. Now, Brendan, I'm asking you this morning very personally. His eyes, they look for truth. Do they find it in you? Do they find a repository that is just overflowing with what is more precious than silver and gold, the Proverbs tell us? Truth. Buy it and sell it not. God looks into your heart. Would He preserve a nation for you? The one who truly seeks it. O Lord, do not your eyes look for truth. You have smitten them, but they did not weaken. You consumed them, but they refused to take correction. They've made their faces harder than rock. They've refused to repent. So Jeremiah agrees with him. I get it, Lord. I don't think I could find even one. And we are doomed. Jeremiah chapter 7 now, verse 25 to 28. "Since the day that your fathers came out of the land of Egypt until this day, I have sent you all my servants the prophets, daily rising early and sending them. Yet they did not listen to me or incline their ear, but stiffened their neck. They did more evil than their fathers. You shall speak all these words to them, but they will not listen to you. You shall call to them, they will not answer you. You shall say to them, this is the nation that did not obey the voice of Yahweh their God or accept correction. Truth has perished and has been cut off from their mouth. They not only don't know what it is, brethren, it's died within them, but they don't speak of it anymore. Now, brethren, I've known 7 years of mostly bliss. There's been a few hearts that were obviously very hardened toward the truth, but not many, not most. Brethren, let it not perish on Coburg Road. And that can almost, I think, be ensured as long as you don't cut it off from your mouth. If you go boldly to declare this truth, likely God will bless your efforts with a response to it. So as I think about 6 lessons to go, and I hope I get some feedback from you, if this was my last day, I would say this to you. Love you like children, like family, because you are. Seek the truth above absolutely everything else. God will bless you with peace and long life. God will bless you with success in your every endeavor and wherever you go. You can start a dynasty in your family, very likely, if that truth is what matters above all else. If I can help, some other the elders can help maybe, if anyone in this congregation can be of help to you this morning in drawing you closer to that truth or in helping you to respond to the gospel of Jesus Christ, let it be known. Speak with me or them as we stand.